is the Great Shalom Broadcast, proclaiming that God wants total well-being for all children.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Great Shalom Broadcast, and I'm Sharon Searles, and today I'm going to give you something of a book review of a book called Kingdom Education by Glenn Schultz. Glenn, G-L-E-N, Schultz, S-C-H-U-L-T-Z. Published by Lifeway, copyright 1998. I can hardly believe it. I have seldom read something that is as hard-hitting and wide-ranging. He has scholarship from, you know, he quotes Moeller from the Baptists and Brunner from the Presbyterians and Dr. Ravi Zacharias. to start out, and so many others. It's wonderful. I really am enthusiastic about what I'm reading, even though it's something somewhat outside of I wasn't aware of this author before. Okay, so this fellow, Glenn Schultz, has a lot of experience as an educator and speaks for the necessity of a strong foundation for every boy and girl in a God-centered worldview. So Schultz works with Lifeway Christian School Resources, and he has been an educator, been a director of the Association of Christian Schools International, ACSI, which is one of the biggest accreditation groups for Christian schools. In this book, Kingdom Education, he sets forth the necessity for kingdom education. Last episode, I mentioned that I think many people are beginning to consider homeschooling who hadn't in the past because of the lockdown. And that may be true. Also, I think that people are beginning to question what's going on in public school, what's going on with our youth when we see such a pervasive uprising of violence and incivility for an admittedly Marxist regime. So this is not like when I was in the third grade and somebody was accusing of the Girl Scouts of being communist, and I simply had no evidence for that. But in this case, we are seeing young people march in the streets, say that they want to bring down our government, say that they are Marxist, and identify. Well, I'm thinking of one particular picture, a young person who identified as a Afro-Indigenous non-binary person. To look at her, I would have thought she was a white female. But anyway, so this kind of interaction, so it's one thing for grandparents to say, oh gosh, my grandchildren. It's another thing for them to go, wait a minute, this is not just my family. This is a pervasive thing. If this isn't this pervasive, then it has to be going on in the schools. Oh, yes. And not just the colleges, encouraging the students to be critical thinkers and activists, but the public schools. And I'm here to tell you, even the preschools. So this is the context that we're talking in 2020. But Schultz, this book was written in 1998. And yet it's very, very applicable to today. He says, what will our society be like in 20 years? And oy vey, my predictions have been right. You know, in the, gosh, when was it? The 80s, the mid-80s, I said, if this kind of classroom management continues, we're going to have violence in our school in 10 years. And unfortunately, I was correct. And when I saw in the early aughts what was going on in the schools, I said, these people are not used to working. They're so entitled. What's going to happen 20 years from now when they're in the workforce? and they vote. Oh my gosh, I was right. So he opens up his book, What Will Our Society Be Like in 20 Years? And of course, we're 22 years from when he wrote this. Will our homes be like the same, you know, what type of person will be sitting in our pew each Sunday? And throughout the book, he quotes statistics from Barna that show how many of our children do not leave their home church with a strong faith or any faith. Pollster George Barna has found that only 7-8% of those identifying themselves as Christians then were biblical in their understanding. So if only 7-8% of self-identified Christians are biblical in their understanding, and 80% of the kids who graduate from Christian homes and Christian churches don't go on to even be church members, what does that, and that was 20 years ago, and the trend continues. Actually, it's worse. What does that mean for our society? Unfortunately, I think we're seeing that on the nightly news. So Schultz quotes Barna. He believed that our society was headed for spiritual revival or moral anarchy, and that generation would determine which direction we would take. And they're sitting in the classrooms at that time. So Schultz would suggest that the church's main mission is the Great Commission. And he quotes Rabbi Zacharias as the nation going in a completely opposite direction. I'll read from Schultz. I never imagined how fast our country would begin living out the secular humanistic philosophies that have dominated American education for the past 100 plus years. Dr. Ravi Zacharias of blessed memory, great apologist, and I'm sad he recently passed, in a speech given in Amsterdam 2000, stated that there have been 5 major changes that have had significant impact on cultures around the world. 1, a willingness of atheism to live with its dire consequences. 2, sweeping impact of Eastern mysticism that will deny the uniqueness of Christ. 3, the controlling impact of the visual. 4, the rising reality of a youth-oriented world. 5, the lost center of cultural molding that has resulted in the loss of a single source of authority with the right to lay claim to moral direction. The right to lay claim to moral direction. Dr. Zacharias challenged his audience with the question that faces Christians today. How do you reach a generation that hears with its eyes and thinks with its feelings? How do you reach a generation that hears with its eyes and thinks with its feelings and is preloaded to know that anyone who thinks that, this is me talking, preloaded to think that anyone who thinks that the Bible has all of most of life answers is therefore the social problem. A person who knows that we need to believe in things like global warming and has been weaponized for Marxism, and who believes in violence and not in civility or dialogue. Back to Schultz. In June 2002, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals passed out a ruling that declared the pledge to the flag of the United States was unconstitutional because it had the words in it, under God. Of course, that's been reversed, but the fact that it could happen is an important touchstone, a milestone, a red flag, if you will. Later on in the book, well, so he's saying that we need an education that will educate people correctly and that brings God back into the center of all of the disciplines, not merely something tacked on, because then it becomes an inoculation. If we really adopt in our Christian schools a secular worldview, and in our churches and in our homes, and then tack on little God, then what we have done is inoculate the children, inoculate them from the claims of Christ. Schultz, ever since the creation of man, there has been a need to educate people correctly. When God created man, he instructed him to have dominion over the earth. This meant that he would need to learn much about God's creation in order to fulfill this command. God's first assignment was to name all the animals so that future generations would be able to identify all the animals that God had created. From this initial assignment, man began the process of passing knowledge or education from one generation to the next. Throughout successive eras, there has been a continuing emphasis on training children to live a productive life here on earth and to relate individually to God's creative intention. So clearly he's rooted in a completely different kind of theology. Well, not completely, but somewhat different theology than the churches I go to. But I think his point is clear, that from the beginning, we were expected to teach our children. We know this from Deuteronomy 6. And that the whole assignment had to do with creation and not simply a rescue out of it, although he's not addressing that. Back to Schultz. Today we find ourselves reeling from more than four decades of moral decline in society. Crime rates are soaring, the family unit is disintegrating, the church has lost much of its ability to be salt and light in the world. Well, it's much worse now than it was in 1998. Many experts claim that education is the only hope for tomorrow. However, the education system now in place has removed God and His Word from its classrooms. Therefore, all the efforts to improve educational programs has only led to further problems and greater frustrations. I'd put the period there, he says, for many parents. Period. Since it is God who created this world and its inhabitants, it is He alone who can tell us how to stem the tide of this moral decline. In the Bible, God gives the home and the church the fundamental principles of how our children should be educated. If we are to make a difference in this world, we must once again follow God's instruction on how the home and church are to train future generations. Responsibility for training children has always belonged in the home, with the church joining forces with the parents since the day of Pentecost. Although schools are not specifically mentioned in the Bible, they have become a part of the fabric of today's society. Therefore, Christians must determine just how the school is to fit into God's scheme of education. We cannot separate the school from the home or the church and be successful from God's perspective when it comes to the education of today's children and youth. And he does unpack that in this book, how they should fit together and so forth. He also mentions that pastors typically don't touch this. Because pastors are in a political situation, they don't want to offend all the public, the professional educators who work in the public system, maybe in the church. They may be afraid to take a position of for homeschooling because it might be seen as against the Christian schools and against these public professionals and public school professionals. And so it's easier not to discuss the topic of education entirely. If he talks about Christian schools, then he might offend the homeschool parents who say this is the parents' responsibility. So he talks about the possibility of delegating part of your responsibility. He unpacks all of that. He also mentions how often what is given in the church as parenting is warmed over psychology with a veneer of Christianity at best. And sometimes we're not even getting that much. A quick look at history emphasizes the importance of education to the future of our society. Emil Brunner presented a speech to the Presbyterian Synod of Virginia in 1941. His words sound a warning that Christians today must heed. Okay, so here's Brunner. Ah, there is where you make your mistake. The paganism of Germany was not a sudden thing. For over half a century, God and religion have been gradually disappearing from the schools of Germany. Education has become secular. A generation has arisen which acknowledges no God and no longer regards those basic moral sanctions which are the safeguard of national and international harmony and decency. This is why the churches of Germany are empty, and the nation has turned its face toward the darkness in the wake of Adolf Hitler. The words of Emil Brunner in 1941. And that should ring a bell for today. You understand, because one of the groups that runs the rioting and the looting was formed in Hitler's Germany. And much of the philosophy, or if not all of the philosophy, that's tearing down statues, that was birthed in Maoism, to take away history so you can build a new society. Not hard when we have 100 years of watering down and taking away actual history in our country. We'll have an episode about that. Schultz. The kingdom education must be in control in the homes, the churches, and the schools of our society if we are to avoid repeating this tragic scenario. In the pages that follow, we will outline a biblical philosophy that Christian parents, church leaders, and Christian educators must follow in educating their child or children. A model for kingdom education could be linked to the milking stool. So he's going to talk about how it would be solid. If given three principles, it would be solid, no matter their shaking in society. But it's going to be a biblical philosophy, or the education system will fail. He goes on to say, we would be wise to study how the Jewish community has maintained its culture regardless of its geographical location or the size of its membership. The reality is that every individual in the community has the same goal for every Jewish baby. The goal is to instill within that child the Jewish faith. And he addresses then how we include Greek and Latin content into our curriculums and so forth. Now, he says it's not the intention of this book to convince every church to start a school, but it is his intent to make every Christian aware of God's plan for training children and youth, and then to motivate them to be sure that their children are receiving such an education. If we're successful in this effort, it's his sincere belief that the next generation can be trained in such a way that they can go out and turn their world upside down for Christ. Acts 17 and 6. The downward spiral of moral decline can be halted, and the family unit can be rebuilt, and the church can once again become salt and light in our culture. We should have heeded this a great deal more in 1998. He goes on and on and on with statistics from Barna, and you know, we have recently lived those past 20 years, and we were comfortable in our churches, and we did not realize that the surrounding culture and even our children were going literally to hell, handbasket or not. And what makes me shudder the most is some of the words in this book I have heard on the lips of leftists saying, this is what they're like. We've got to be sure that we stamp them out. We've got to educate the children. We've got to take them away before their minds are twisted by these kinds of parents who want to instill a godly worldview. The sky is much darker today, to the point where the only discussion is, how soon will the tribulation start? But I'm going to tell you, as long as we have any light at all. So I don't want to get into arguing eschatology, but as long as we have any light at all, this is what we ought to be doing. As long as we have children, as long as we have freedoms, we need to consider the basis on which we educate them. And does that godly worldview, biblical worldview, as God as creator and Jesus as redeemer, does that infuse everything we do, whether we homeschool or whether we have a Christian school? And is a public school even an option? If it is an option, or if it is the only option for you because of circumstances, you need to really, truly be aware of what is going on. They do intend to mold your child's worldview. There is no discussion about a better science, better than evolution. They will not be discussing how racist Darwin was. They may be having a discussion about reparations today because they haven't heard about 40 acres and a mule. And they may be doing some kind of math that you can't even follow, even though you have had graduate level math courses and your child is in the first grade. What is going on? Remember what Sherlock Holmes said. Eliminate those things that are not true. And whatever is left, consider those. So what he's saying is, people usually don't consider what they consider impossible, but it may be possible, and that maybe is exactly what's going on. We have fractures in the family. We have fractures in society. And we do not have a good public school system. And the initiatives to improve it have failed. If improving has any kind of content that I know about. We have a problem in the church. Oh, is that even a controversy? Many of our churches are not even open at this point. And most of the biggest ones have no discipleship programs. And what are they doing with the children? In 1998, this book read, statistics show that only 30% of youth in churches have taken ownership of their own faith by the time they graduate from high school. According to Burkett, he's talking about Larry Burkett, a large evangelical denomination recently reported that if they had been successful at just one evangelical outreach, that of their own children, their denomination would be 4 times larger than it is today. That was 1998, folks, before the smartphone came out. Since the smartphone has come out, what are the kids doing during church? I heard a pastor say, these kids now sit on the pews looking like zombies. It's not because they were looking at the phone then, but even when they're looking at him, they act like zombies. He thinks because they were poisoned by porn on their phones. But even if it's not porn, how many of you in church get doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction? And how many of you have ever seen it done in a loving fashion? Can you even imagine education that would make for total well-being? Can you imagine an education that is so enlivening to the children that they love to come to school? I've seen that. It is possible. Can you imagine education that makes children so competent as when they graduate from high school that they can run an international convention? The Lamberts kids ran the Texas Homeschool Coalition Conference in the Woodlands quite successfully, where they're at the top of their class, their first college class, and I had to pair the homeschool with the 40-year-old, the homeschool high school student with the 40-year-old. I told her, don't tell anybody how old you are, because she was top of the class. And I wanted to use her in discussion. I wanted her to put forth her ideas. So I told her, don't tell anybody, you're just 16. Okay, so whether it's homeschooling, whether it's private schooling, whether it's public schooling, get this book, Kingdom Education. And I'm going to talk next time about the necessity of your congregation investing in education. And remember, it's only what you invest in that will return you dividends. It is for your sake. Invest in this broadcast. Share it, participate, comment, and send money, and buy the products. Tens of thousands have partaken of this ministry. Not everyone has a lot of money, but everyone has some money, and everyone can share. Everyone can contribute. Some people were even offended that I attempted to raise money for starving people in Africa last time. We may not realize how far we are in to unrighteousness, stealing, entitlement, Marxism, whatever you call it. All right? So ask the Lord what you can do. Amen? GreatShalom.org. Great like big, Shalom. S-H-A-L-O-M. GreatShalom.org. And this is Sharon Sorrell saying that God wants total well-being for all children.
Thank you for joining us for the Great Shalom broadcast with your host, Sharon Sorrells. Sharon is an author, educator, minister, parent, and grandparent committed to sharing the understanding of God's love and desire that all children experience optimal well-being in this generation and the generations to come. The Great Shalom broadcast is here to bring hope, health, and healing for children and youth by inspiring, informing, equipping parents and educators. For more information on today's program or today's offer, simply log on to greatshalom.org or email info@greatshalom.org.